six pack lap of that. And we got world champion, legend of the game, Tony Cliff. Tony, we are weeks away from Sheffield. Ed, how is prep going? How are things going?
How are you doing, sir? Yeah, I'm well. Thank you for having me back on again.
Course.
Yeah, prep's going really well, worryingly well, which is an interesting position for me to be in. Obviously, before Worlds, I had problems with my knees. I did a competition. I don't know, it was a bit 4 or 5 weeks ago. I had a problem with my back. But yeah, the last couple of weeks seems to have just, no, timing's perfect, right? Everything just seems to have fallen into place. Had some physio and stuff. Yeah, after post Christmas, everything's really starting to click. So yeah, the last week's training, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, PB'd every day in the gym. Like, well, that hasn't happened for a while. So yeah.
Meet at 40 years old, hitting personal
Yeah.
bests.
Yeah. Well, I'm not 40 yet. I've got another 2 months.
Nice. So the
I'm
hell are
clinging
you?
and I'm clinging to those 2 months. Yeah.
Coming in hot. You're coming in hot. But this is happening just at the perfect time. Did you have like injuries, or were they just kind of
Niggles,
hurts?
niggles that went over the edge of just being a niggle, you know. So
Okay.
I had to have an injection in my left knee for like cartilage wear and damage. So I had an Ostensil Plus injection in my left knee just after Worlds. So a week after Worlds, I went and got it done because I thought, well, perfect timing, I'll go and sort it out. So my knees were fine, and then my back, I've had various issues with my back over the years, but it was just wear and tear, just a lot of use, bit tired, not being doing the physio as much as I should have been, so I just got booked back in. Like, I've been going every week since beginning of December, and that's really helped. So yeah, everything's working. I mean, I feel like I'm just on the knife edge of like pushing too hard and going over it, and something going wrong, and just trying to stay the right side of it. I mean, I had a bit of back and forth with Matt Gary online the other day about trying to walk that tightrope of pushing hard enough, but not so much that you go over the edge, you know.
Is Matt Gary going to be coaching you for this?
No, it's just a friend, and I just messaging back and forth. Now I've got Jordan McLaughlin's coming with me to coach on the day. Like I was saying, I was on the Sabado podcast a few weeks ago, and I was saying, and the reason George's coming with me is because he likes to have a laugh and take the pressure off. And I think in that situation, you need that sort of stress relief kind of around you. Well, I do anyway, to perform my best. If I'm all amped up and stressed out, I'll just clamp up and everything will go wrong. I need to be able to relax. And so.
The years you have in the game, and you've been in the game, like if anyone doesn't know Tony Cliff by now, I mean, I don't know where you've been, but so you're multiple time world champion, competing in and out of equipment, but doing this for like 20 years, and you've never experienced anything like Sheffield, and Sheffield's around the corner now. And it's very rare for, like, 2 months shy of 40, and you've been around so long to have a new experience. Well, this is new. And to have something as big as Sheffield looming, what are you feeling about this coming into Sheffield, knowing I'm about to take that platform, and it's going to be bigger than last year? The teams have doubled their expectations, people's viewership, it's going to be crazy. What are you feeling like walking in here? Are you nervous, excited, or do you think I'm going to own this? I'm going to show these people. I'm going to put on a show, because you've seen what some of the people did when they showed up. They're like, I'm ramping it up a little bit. What are you thinking?
Yeah, ner nervous, excited, like I'm going into my first ever international. Like I said, when I went to my first international at Europeans, I was really nervous, like threw up, really struggled. I'm not quite as bad as that. I think I'm just really excited for the competition, and having seen it when I was there last year and been sat in the crowd watching it, so I know what's coming. We're sold out already, sold out, what, a couple of weeks ago, last week. Yeah, just really excited, and I'm not even, thinking about the competition and winning prize and doing that. The whole point of all of this was just to get on that platform and be able to be in front of that crowd that are mad for powerlifting, and I can't wait. I'm just really excited and can't wait to get on there. And with training going well as well as alongside of it, it's really exciting opportunity to put your name on the map, sort of thing, try and cement something like Jesus did last year. I think he really bowled onto the scene after the, you know, his performance last year. And that was really exciting. I can't wait to be on there with him.
Impression you can make at that venue with that crowd in the amount of eyeballs like casuals watch it, because it's one day, it's just a killer session. It's one session, one day, one, it's all killer, no filler, all world championships. It's like so pumped up. I've said this before on the podcast, but I would listen to other podcasts that weren't powerlifting podcasts and they would mention it. Did you hear about that event? You hear about that one guy did, and they would talk about Jesus, or did you hear about, like, it just that's what it can be. And even if you go on there, Gavin Aiden proved you have 60 seconds every lift, and Gavin didn't win his clash in his weight class. He made the podium, so he did phenomenal. But he didn't break any particular world record. He broke it, and it got taken away from him. But and he didn't win his head-to-head clash with Keiko, and still everybody left talking about Gavin Aiden. You have a moment. You have an opportunity regardless. You sell it like you're crushing, and they're like, this guy's crushing. You give them a show, you know, they're going to be like, oh, wow, what a freaking show. And everybody is going to be talking about you at the cooler on Monday.
Well, I said that about Gavin's performance actually, and I have to apologize to him as well, because I said, oh, I just thought it was just another cocky American. But I really, really enjoyed his performance at that competition. And why would you say that about someone's competition? It's really, really odd thing to say, but if you're used to watching powerlifting competitions to comment on somebody's performance at a competition, that's not really a thing. You comment on how well they lifted. But there, because you're basically in a theater, feels like you are watching a performance. You're not just watching some random guys come out and lift some weights. You're watching that the whole thing is more of a performance and a show. And you know, it is an exhibition at the end of the day. So to have something extra like that, I haven't got anything planned. I'm not going to suddenly turn up in a wig or anything. Like, you're going to get me.
That'd be amazing. But yeah, it is. That's well said. And we talked about this, how I think it's the leveling up with our sport. Like, you've seen so many renditions and so many leveling ups over the years. And even at the world championships, you've probably noticed, because I have, the difference between like the last world championships, 2023, the crowd, they had bleachers, and the way the bleachers were set up, so obviously, like, you know, every level's a little higher, so everyone had an amazing view of it, as opposed to chairs on the floor that just backed up all the way. And if you were in the back, you weren't seeing anything. And and the energy in it, we had people showing up with like flags, their faces painted. The New Zealand people had drums they were beating. When Carlina would hit it, they'd be beating the drums and did the haka in the whole nine. It was amazing when she won, and they did the black jackets. I don't know if it's pertaining just to the black jackets, but they do it. The rugby team, they do the haka where they do that yelling and dancing. And it was, you get chills seeing it, because it's culturally significant for that particular nation. And they're showing their personalities now on the world
But
stage.
I couldn't imagine going to a world championships 5 years ago and that happening. So pre-Sheffield, absolutely no way. It was very sterile. You're normally in like a big sports hall and there's no one in there. There's like one man and his dog. Like, so to go, like the change that it's made, like you said, to world championships. But also we've got to think about where we're hosting those world championships and where they're going and how they're getting people in there. But yeah, it has changed completely. It just from a couple of years ago, even like pre Sheffield and post Sheffield is totally different, and for the right reasons. You know, it's going the right direction. I had a conversation with my dad like 10 or 15 years ago about the direction that powerlifting should go in, and we were talking about, oh, you know, it could be like an X sport and go down that route, and some of the untested we thought, yeah, it might go that way, and then it, you know, and or it has to go professional, and then, you know, it'll look a bit more like it's looking now, with the sponsors coming in and it being a pretty treated as a proper professional sport. And then when you think about other sports that you go to watch, it has to be a performance related viewing, right? It can't just be about, you know, being a sterile, you know, old man sport like it felt like it used to be, and that's changed. And I'm so glad it has in the time that I've been involved in it. I mean, I've been involved in it a long time, so I've seen it evolve from, you know, where it was. Probably not quite as early as McGarry, but we're
Right.
not far off.
No, it feels also as though like the last couple of years have been like exponential. there was a while where it was where it was, and it stayed there for a while, and it was difficult to see where we might be going, and everything seemed like a pipe dream initially. Like if you would talk about TV deals, and there's more that are going to be struck, but we're already on Eurosport. Millions of people can watch live, as well as the highlight packages, which are amazingly done, I'm told. And other companies like White Lights are doing amazing deals with like amazing packages when they do highlights for the sessions. But there was a while there where we couldn't envision certain things. Like if someone said the Olympics, it'd be like, oh, it's a pipe dream. Been hearing that for years. Now that we're at a certain point like this, now with like sponsors and TV, now that we got TV deals coming, and there's more coming in 2024, by the way, and then World Games has gone Classic Raw, and you were around for pre-Classic Raw, post-Classic Raw, and how much that's exploded and helped expand the sport.
Yeah.
Now when we talk, nothing seems that crazy. You might not be like, yes, we will be in the Olympics, but you also wouldn't be like, that's a pipe dream. That's a joke. There's nothing funny about that now. Like, there have sports like freaking, I know you're into, you did compete in judo, but like they have like Sambo going into the Olympics and like sports that are like, we are so much better organized than Sambo, the world championships. Nobody even follows Sambo online. If you go to their national or their world, IG, it has like nobody. It's like we are so much bigger. TV deals and everything we have in place, they have nothing like we do. No. And that's huge.
Well, I think being more relatable and more that people can interpret what's going on, I think equipped it lost its way with that to an extent because people just couldn't relate to it, could they? And I still love equipped lifting in of itself, but you can understand why it's never as popular as classic. And then I think Peter Fiore introduced it first to the Commonwealths, right? And then it went, it kind of snowballed from there, and that first World Cup. And I think the timing of that was just sort of perfect with the spin-offs of CrossFit and other people that were suddenly interested in what's going on in the gym. And then we had a lot of people that, you know, started CrossFit and then were looking for something else. And then the classic really kicked off. It was just perfect timing. I think it's the perfect storm for a success in powerlifting. I never anticipated being here when I first started powerlifting, or, you know, it was just something I enjoyed and enjoyed lifting. And I think once you get the iron bug, right, that's it. You're stuck anyway, right? So because it was never like this. Here are the people that come on the podcast and they were, I'm going to be a world champion, I'm going to do this and do that. That was never me at the beginning of doing any of this. Just did it because I enjoyed lifting. And then stuck around it for that long. And I'm like, I must be, you know, I think I'm a perfect example of probably where sort of sports meets autism is powerlifting. It's like there's quite a lot of that out there, isn't there, with the people that, you know, they're accountants and mathematicians and that get them involved in a sport, and suddenly they're very much like, you know, the number crunching and the writing down and tracking of everything. And yeah, I think you've had a few people that have mentioned that, and it's not really a surprise. Now it's a bit of a joke, isn't it, that, you know, most
like you love
powerlifters
you love
are
the
autistic
numbers
in some way.
Like you love the numbers of it, you mean?
Yeah, the being able to chart your progress, see where you've been, where you're going to, and I think there's something in that that attracts a certain mindset. And then there's others that are not like that at all, and they want to come into powerlifting because, you know, they just happen to be really talented, and then suddenly they're in the limelight and winning everything. And then you get other people like me that weren't ever really like that at the beginning, and it was just a slow grind and a slow slog. And I'm there for those people. Those people,
well,
that, you didn't start out winning everything, but eventually you get there. That's I'm representing those guys.
How old were you when you started
competing? I was 16 when I did my first competition.
Now, can you imagine this? At 16 years old, you start, and here you are, 2 months shy of 40, hitting personal bests, a world champion, and about to compete at the biggest event we have on the calendar, like Sheffield. Who would have ever thought when you're 60? And this is the stuff that nobody thinks about when they enter powerlifting. No. And if they have a bad competition and they're like a junior, early 20s, and it's like, my friend, you have no idea what's coming ahead. I talked to, well, even Rondell. I've had Rondell on the podcast a couple times. And you know his story about the hiatus of 4 years and how difficult that was. And he's like, man, I lost 4 years in my 20s, you know, and it hurts. He's seeing Taylor Atwood be like, you know, I'm the GOAT, blah, blah, blah. And other people saying he's the GOAT as well. Mm-hmm. And they go back and forth sometimes on social media. And Rondell's like, if I wasn't, he wasn't suspended. It's a weird, he was like in a weird zone where the Federation kind of wasn't affiliated and he couldn't get an affiliation. So he just couldn't compete through politics for 4 years. And he's like, my friend, if I was competing and winning titles, people could have been talking about me like that. And instead, and I had him on the podcast and I told him, Rondell, you're still in your 20s. And I know this is very difficult right now, but I would use you as like a source of inspiration. Tony Cliff is still doing it at 40, hitting personal best, a reigning world champion going to Sheffield. You have time to recover. And if you recover and set the record straight and do your thing, all of that will make your story even better. Be like, let me tell you, I won Junior Worlds, out-totaled everybody in the Open at Junior Worlds in Calgary, then lost 4 years. And then came back and blah, blah, blah. Like, there's time.
There's an argument to say, is he at his peak now? And then he's going to be harder for him to maintain that. And then did I not peak when I thought I was peaking? I mean, it's difficult to know. And then it's often that the amount of effort and commitment that he's able to put into his training in the time that he's doing now and peaking, will he get that back in his 30s and, you know, in his late 30s? I don't know. Like, there are so many different variables in that, aren't there? Like, I would say I've probably more committed to consistency in my training in the last 10 years than I ever would have been in my 20s. Well,
why do you think that is? That's interesting.
Life, work, other priorities over training. I was only training twice a week during most of my 20s because I was trying to build my professional career. I was doing my accountancy qualifications, all that stuff. We were getting married, starting a family. And I guess that the stuff after that actually settled my training. It was probably eight years ago when we had Freya. My training got more consistent after that because we're more scheduled, more. I'd already done my accountancy exams. Work life was kind of settled. They get more consistent. I started training from home. I could train more often and when I wanted to. The setup at home, like buying a first house and doing all that. And then after that, it became much more rigid and consistent. And then that's when it started to get better. But then I didn't like peak like for ages after that. I was still chasing Dennis and he was like 50 kilos ahead on total and everything. So I was never, you know, knocking down the doors of world championships. I think I'd have probably won 2015 if it wasn't for Christoph and Buffia coming first and second and then subsequently getting banned. But then thereafter, you take out the drug cheats and their cap and them getting caught. I probably only won one world championship in that period up until 2019 anyway. So you look at that and think, well, maybe I just wasn't ready to peak at that time in doing what I was doing and how I was going about it and my consistency. And you learn, don't you? You learn what gets the best out of you over time. Could probably got there quicker with probably with a coach instead of just doing everything myself and trying to learn the best way to do it for me. But that's the way I wanted to do it. So maybe that's what took so long. Maybe that's not the case for the people. Like you people that are peaking in their 20s and they're doing everything they can and they're doing everything right and their life is focused around it. And that won't be the case for them when they're in their 30s or late 30s.
It's interesting because we just had the GOAT podcast debate with Matt Gary,
the boat
Eric Helms, and Rory Lynch. Yeah, that was fun. That was freaking fun. And those guys can debate, man. Like when Eric Helms came on and started debating, I'm like, frick, you just made me change everything I thought I knew about what I wanted to say for my GOAT. And like, it's difficult because a lot of times, like powerlifting, the growth we have in terms of viewership. Also, we cast a net in terms of bringing in a much bigger spread of lifters and depth of talent has grown so much over the years. So while initially we thought certain people are outliers in 2012, 11, you know, 13, 14, we're like, we had world champions and we thought that person is special. Look at the numbers that are doing. That's just because we didn't have the sample size to know, to compare them. But we thought this person, this is tip of the spear athletic ability right here. Mm-hmm. And then we're in 2022, 2023, and that person wouldn't win a world title 2 weight classes lower. And we just didn't know because we didn't have the sample size. And so the goalposts changed because now we know, no. There are much bigger freaks out there, special people out there, and there might even yet still be. And we're going to continue to grow because I've seen some of the plans we have ahead, which makes you unique, Tony. How are you still here at 40? Too much shy of 40. And you're doing this with this net. Like, most people have fallen off by now. By your age and by the talent pool swelling, you were a unicorn in that you were around that whole time. As a matter of fact, you're peaking and flourishing in this environment as opposed to, well, Tony used to be really good. Now he's just barely hanging on and he's happy to be here. It's the opposite.
I know, I've always been of the mindset that the rising tide rises all boats, right? And in the UK, we've had a massive insurgence into the 120 weight class. Competition like never before at a British Championship in my weight class. Whereas I went years of just rocking up and I could do one lift on each and win it and walk away with the title. Last year, there's five or six people fighting for podium places. That makes a big difference. That makes a big difference into your focus in the training for that. You're focusing your training in the period leading up to that. And it's not just about going from one world championship, getting back into the equipment and doing other stuff, and then getting back into the classic after that. And whilst I think that helped me avoid a few injuries and manage, you know, the getting older and overtraining, it also stopped me progressing as well on just the classic stuff. But now I've had to focus on, I have to be strong for the British. I can't just turn up and do a few lifts, you know, testament to people like Indy, just won the Europeans. Like, I can't just turn up anymore. I've got to turn up and perform. So that's probably made a big difference as well. And like I said, just not picking up those horrendous long-term injuries that, you know, I think people get to a certain age and they start getting plagued with stuff, don't deal with it fully, and eventually it just keeps coming back. Managed to avoid that, touch wood, so far. So yeah, I don't have the answers as to how I've managed to do it compared to anybody else. I'm trying to work it out as I go, and I'm trying to continue being smart with what I'm doing, which isn't always easy.
Well, I mean, because like you said, you feel the pressure, and it's like a razor's edge. You can't not push. No. These are moments that you know. I mean, these moments are fleeting, so you want to push, but at the same token, you're like, I can't over push. There's just that sweet spot of a line, and it's.
But this part of that is you can push on certain periods in the week and in that month's training, but there, if you're building into your training plan a period where you should be taking your foot off the gas and recovering and letting some fatigue drop, do that. Don't. Because you feel good, suddenly do something else. You've got to stick to that plan. And that is what I mean by the consistency and staying in the pocket with your training. And then on the certain weeks where it does feel good and you've planned to, okay, let's push it a little bit, and you feel like it's there, then you can. And then not doing that, because then you just don't make any progress. that's the other thing. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about that. And then I'm managing niggles, and then some days you wake up and everything's hurting. Like I did a light squat session last Thursday, and I had a hoodie on, and I pulled my hood to one side, and I think I was squatting like with my head to one side, and I finished the squat session, like my neck for the next 3 days was like completely concrete. I was like, what's going on? I was just getting old. And then, you know, by Monday it was recovered again and I was fine. Just... they're the things you have to deal with, right? You know what it's like when you get out of bed the wrong side and something starts hurting and you don't know what you've done.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'll deal with this today. Do you still coach yourself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you find it's almost like too late where you fine-tuned it, everything you just mentioned? So you know, all right, I know the recovery I need after this. It's been decades you've been doing this and you've gotten yourself to this point. Do you think it's almost too late, Rick? Look, if I hand off now and give it to someone else, we have to start from scratch. They have to learn me. I could tell them, but you do so many auto corrections during your programming yourself on the fly, and you know, and you've won world titles. We're talking about Sheffield now. It's almost like.
Yeah, it feels like it's probably too late to feel like I could hand the reins over to someone else and be fully trusting of everything, that would take a long time. And I'd be chopping and changing stuff, and they'd be asking me why I changed it. I think that you'd go through a year or two of that, I think. And I haven't took that leap. There's a few people out there that I would trust to do that, I guess, that I've known for years, but I think most of that time would then me just be explaining why I didn't do what they put in the program. Yeah, so right. Is there a lot of value in going through that? I don't know. Probably not at this stage.
I was talking to Evie Corrigan, and she was saying, I haven't dropped that episode, I'm going to, but she was saying she's trying, because her story, like, just overnight, she went from 57 to a 52 as a 57 at Worlds, finishing off podium, not winning world titles, would have been, and she was happy with that, going into Sheffield through a regional invite. So, you know, slipping in through a regional invite and going to be ranked 12th of 12, you know, but it's still a murderer's row, but 12th of 12. And then that's her 2022. Her 2023 wins Sheffield, the biggest event in powerlifting, with the biggest upset of the year for sure, maybe of all time that I could think of off the top of my head, when you're 12th and you win the biggest event period with nothing but killers, and then goes through the world championships. She doesn't even need her last deadlift to win. She just comes out and waves to the crowd, thank you very much, I'll save it for the next Sheffield, and wins. In talk about a difference in 1 year can make. And it was such a stark contrast. I was asking her about her experience. And she's like, I have to stop to take it in. And I have to remind it's overwhelming. And you know, it's like crazy. It's like living a dream when it's that much of a stark contrast, right? And then it's a little bit the opposite of yourself, which was like a slow grind, like you said, year after year, a little closer, a little closer, a little closer, a little closer for decades. And then here you are. And I'm wondering what your experience is now, because you've won Worlds before. And then there's this, even post the lockdowns and everything, you've won and then come back again. You've bombed, come back. Like, you've felt it and tasted it all. So your experience going through winning Worlds, knowing what that means, and the Eurosport deal, and then coming into Sheffield, when you show up and you arrive at these events, is it entirely different, where you're like, look at, I don't know how many more times. For her, she's like, I might be doing this five more times. I might be doing one. Who knows of a killer? What are you like? Are you like, no, I need to soak this in. Tomorrow's not promised.
Yeah, that's exactly how I'm going about everything at the minute. So treat every championship as it might be the last one. And I know that sounds a bit ridiculous, but that is the reality of what I'm facing, I guess. It may not be. It may be that I carry on for another 5 years, but I have to treat it that way, because I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And I probably haven't got enough time to recover from anything if it's really, really bad. You know, it takes a year to get over something, you know, a bad injury or whatever, and then I don't have that chance to come back. But also, not getting too hung up on the outcome of things as well. I think that's been a big differentiator. Is, you know, you go into a championship and you're hoping to win, and you come third or you bomb. Yeah, okay, it's always the next championship. Whereas now, I go into competition and go, well, I've already got plenty of bronze medals and plenty of silver medals, and the attitude here is that let's just go for the win. Like, there's nothing to lose. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're not winning it, then you're not winning it. So that's the same for me as, you know, coming dead last. And I did say that when I bombed in Dubai, because I just went hell for leather and just said, well, I'm just going to take all the risks I want. I've already won a Worlds this year. I could do what I like here and it won't matter. And it completely backfired, and I did a 1-for-9 performance, and it was the worst performance of any British international. But I also finished that year world champion and the only British world champion we've got in Classic. So I did go, well, you know, rough with
not
the
a
smooth.
Bad year still.
Yeah, don't care. That is a big thing, is that I'm not worrying about, you know, Sheffield's different because it doesn't work like that anyway, but I'm not going into a world championship thinking, oh, I just want to make the podium, or, you know, I go in there to win it nowadays. Like, what's the point in aiming for anything else? And if you're going to fall and it's a choice between, you know, coming fourth and taking the win, I'm going to take that gamble. Now, what's the Well, why would I not at this stage? Like, no one's going to remember if you, oh, well done, he came fourth and he's still in the top five. No one's going to be talking about that.
Right. That dude, that's what I love about it. You are like when we go into Worlds and we have well, Bob, let's see what happens with like I don't know when Rundell's gonna be back, but Rundell conceivably at some time in the future, but Bob will be there. Possibly Big Dev from the US. We have like, you know, we have Jonah from Germany. We have some killers coming up.
Yeah.
But when you're in that mix, everyone knows because you now have that attitude and you're in that, it's like, look at, you know what I'm gunning for. I don't give a shit about the spread. Get a spread on me. You are never out of range that I'm gonna shoot for you. I will finish eighth for an attempt to take a shot at your head, sir.
Yeah,
You know, like it makes it
that's the way I'm coming
exciting.
in. They know what to expect is that I'm coming in to try and win it. So they're gonna have to put a wedge, you know, between me and first, to be really in contention. Yeah, some of them have got a big pull, like Indy, like it's massive. But I messaged him the other day and said, I hope you're ready to pull 455 by the time we get to Worlds.
Well, you got a big pull too, though.
Yeah. Well, not as big as Indy's, but yeah.
Fair enough, but it's close. It's definitely big. And yeah, there is something about, like me and you've talked about in DMs, but there is something where you show up at these events and you, for sure, this is powerlifting. And because you're in the weight class you're in, I think big men last longer, not just powerlifting, but some other sports that happens as well for some reason. Like boxing, MMA, I'm a fan of, and I watch, and they last longer too. For sure, no question about it. And I think you're in a weight class that you might have four or five more. But the fact that maybe a bad injury away from it closing off, it's scary, but there's also something beautiful about that. Watching a guy coming out, even as a fan, watching him come out and knowing, and you know to appreciate him. Sometimes you don't appreciate what you have until it's gone, but when you hit the platform, you know, like, here's a legend of the game, a multiple time world champion with all he's brought in. And this might be the last time we see him pulling for the win or whatever. Maybe not, but it might be. Appreciate this right now. You know, the
Yeah,
crowd will
absolutely.
receive you differently. You know, the crowd receives you differently when you know this. This guy's, he's coming out, he's defending his world title. When everyone shows up at Worlds, he's defending. He's going to defend. He's going to fight that fight. And you will be 40 at that time. And it'll be like, let's see if these young guns, is it this year? Let's
Yeah,
see. You're going to take it from.
that's the beauty of being an old fart as well, though, isn't it? So if you win, like you got beaten by a 40-year-old, and if you lose, oh well, you beat someone's granddad. That'd be well done. It's a win-win for
Oh.
me.
And you'll always be the sentimental favorite. Whatever sport, whenever you tune in and you see, like, that guy's 40 and you're scrapping out with people in their 20s, always people, you become the sentimental favorite. Because every single one of us is aging. There's no beating around it. Father Time's undefeated. So you automatically, like, let's go. Everyone tuning in on Eurosport watching that World Championships is going to be like, let's go, Tony. You know, even if they don't know you, whatever nation they are, like, let's give them hell. Let's see how far we could push it. And even for yourself, it makes you appreciate every moment. Because you don't know. Nothing's
Well,
promised when you're riding that.
I definitely feel like that for Sheffield. Like, so trying to, and you know, I've said this before, but trying to be present and soak it all up, and people trying to cope with that atmosphere by, you know, trying to switch it off and stay in their own head. I can't afford to do that. I want to be there and in it and awake and alert and know exactly what's going on. Yeah, I also heard a lot of people that. You talked to a lot of people in this podcast that are at World Championships, and I don't take any notice of the scoreboard. I leave it to the coaches, and I focus on myself. I'm like, I know everything that's going on. I'm all over the scoreboard. I'm basically coaching myself during the championship. I was like, I'm making recommendations to my own coaching staff about changing openers and doing this and, you know, making plans. So I'm very much in it and aware of everything that's going on around me. I'm trying, and I deliberately try and be that way, I think, because it feels like otherwise I'm missing out on something. I don't know. It feels alien to me to not be completely absorbed in what's going on.
Well, you
And
got
I know
almost
we'll
a
be there as
quarter
well.
century. You got almost a quarter century in the game. You have input to give. I talk to some lifters, and they are like elite level, and they don't know lot numbers, chips. They don't know. Like, you'd be surprised what they don't understand. I talk to some lifters, and they won't even understand how the conflict of interest of having one coach handle two people that are really close going head to head, and they'll be okay with it. And it's like, my friends, your coach is going to make a decision that's going to benefit one of you and hurt the other. Like, if you're that close in the same weight class, yes, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, this is not, there's a conflict of interest there, and they won't fully realize, like, my friends, you know, whereas you were a quarter century in, you being alert and helping somebody, your input is going to be huge. You might be like, listen, you've seen it all. You've been through it all. How many freaking international events you've been to? You've seen every single scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be a benefit if I was handling you. I'd be like, Tony, what do you think, man?
What should we do?
What's good? Let's work together here.
That's good.
But yeah.
I can see myself going down that route, the coaching route as well. I like to be in, to cope with, you know, oh, suddenly it's not there for me anymore, being international or whatever. I think I could see myself going down that path. I could see the enjoyment in it. Yeah, understand why people do it. The excitement of it, and it does feel like you're part of it, you know. So
Well,
I
you
could see
are,
myself
though.
definitely doing that.
Ex ex these days, like, we have legends in game day handling that are just as respected. Like, when people meet guys, like we're talking about Matt Gary, when people meet like a Matt Gary, like, oh shit, that's Matt Gary. Like, he's a legend. People like tip their hat, like, that's the GOAT. That's the, you know, they talk about. So it's for sure you carry on. And then you having won world titles and Sheffield's about to happen and everything. When you handle, I guarantee you, like, I know if I was a lifter, early 20s, and I walk in there and you're my handler, I'm going to be far more at ease. It's intimidating for a lot of lifters when they show up at Worlds, and it's going to get more and more intimidating the bigger the world championships get, the more viewership and the swelling of outliers. Gavin Aiden's got an amazing quote where leading into Worlds, he's like, let's see who's the most extreme outlier of all outliers. And I love that quote where it's like, it's true. These are all the outliers from all over the world. Who's the most extreme outlier of all the outliers? Let's find out. But when you're in that pressure cooker situation, how much more at ease you feel the day of when waiting for you by the warm-ups or waiting for you at the weigh-ins is Tony Cliff, and that's your guy. You will feel so much more confident.
We had that with Tony Stevens. Like, so when I first started going to internationals, to have him there with his experience, all right, he probably wasn't as involved as like some of the other coaches in terms of picking the numbers and whatnot, but just to have him as part of the team, having, you know, won world, two world games, and, you know, four world championships or whatever the hell he'd won everything. And he's the GOAT. If we're going to talk about GOATs for British powerlifting, you know, Tony Stevens' name comes up again and again and again. The only person to ever won World Games, who's done it twice. To have him in your corner really settled the nerves, especially for someone new and you've not been in that environment before. To have somebody there that you can just chat to, not necessarily about what's going on either, just anything, just to take your mind off. You know, and like I said about taking the pressure off and me performing best when I'm relaxed, it was really important to have him there to sort of just to chat to, and that was a huge thing. So if, even if I wasn't heavily involved in the coaching initially, just to be there in the war room and assisting, I think would be I could get some value out of that, I think.
Well, there's no question. And when the game starts being played and you're going against other, like, I mean, Sweden, phenomenal coaching staff, US has got a good pick of the litter for who they can grab as well. There's certain nations that have really good coaching staff. And if it's close, when it's a close battle, look at, if someone's got a big spread on everyone else, God bless, it is what it is. But if it's a close battle, it's going to come down to coaching. Yeah, it will. And that's when things get interesting. Like, we've seen Matt Gary has gotten wins when he should not have got a win. Like, Bryce Lewis should never have beaten Ashton Rowska at American Nationals and then gone to Worlds. And Matt Gary just got close. He knew, like, this. I mean, afterwards, even Bryce would be like, oh, I just beat Ashton. How the fuck? But it'll happen. It'll happen. You know, if you got a guy like Matt Gary, he'll squeeze everything out and
Well, that's what
he'll
he says.
play the
So,
game.
being the strongest is, you know, is the trump card, but it's not the entire deck, right? So you've got to know all the other tricks and cards to play. And he certainly obviously does. And we've got our coaching staff that definitely do. does get interesting, doesn't it, when it comes down to a real close battle like that. And it will, and more and more world championships are going to be decided like that, I think.
Oh yeah.
We've not had every weight class be like that, but I think we're getting there now, especially with the USAPL guys going back over as well, filling out some of the classes. Yeah, okay, it's gonna start to get very choppy. But again, there's me, they're going, well, you guys are gonna be worried about making the podium. And I'm like, nope. Don't care about that. Win or nothing.
Other people are like, if you make the podium, you get the World Games. Like, you've done everything.
Done that. You know, don't care. Go for the win.
Exactly. Yeah, that's not on my checkbox. That's on your guys.
Yeah.
Me, let's rumble, young man, rumble. And there is, I think, like, for sure, the more the depth of each class gets and there's more and more lifters clustering at the top, the more game day handling is going to be more and more pivotal.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for, there's no doubt you'll get, like, in terms of competitiveness, you'll get your bite on that, like, later on. But as for right now, do you think that'll be coming into this world championships factor with some of these people crossing over? And some nations are relatively new, like, sure. US, Matt Gary just said, I'm going to be a head coach. So US is going to be covered. I don't know how you feel about that. You're probably like, God damn it. I kind of wanted to.
Not ideal.
Ideal. You're the, but other nations are rising so fast that their talent of lifters is getting them to the world championships before their program can catch up. So their game day coaching, I've noticed at Worlds when I'm commentating.
It's not as good. Yeah, yeah.
Like the mistakes.
The German coaches not knowing that the world record bench was 253 in the 120s for Jonah and missing out on that. I mean, it saves me half a kilo at Sheffield, but you know, those kind of things, those little errors that are there, they'll cost somebody a world title at some stage. So they have to tighten up on those, right? But those guys, they experienced that now, that they've got that. So they'll
right.
take that for the next one. They know now. So they'll be checking everything. Yeah, it will make a huge difference. And with it being tight, yeah, like, you know, if it's Bob or it's Dev or it's Dennis in the US team coming with Matt, well, that's going to be a hell of a challenge, regardless of who the lifter is, to be honest. it just is going to be. So yeah, we need to be on point. And we need to be getting everything right ourselves as well, to make sure that we're in contention when it comes to the last pull, because I think that's where we'll be.
Before we get into the possible worlds, it's interesting that with Sheffield, you were like, yeah, man, I'm a little nervous. Does it feel good to be like at this late stage to be, wow, I still have those butterflies. I still got things to look forward to that make me nervous, which is a beautiful thing.
It's good.
Once
I
you
still
run
care.
Out of those,
yeah, yeah. Yeah,
you run out of being nervous for events. You're like, well, what am I doing here now?
What's the point? Yeah, yeah. And right. I mean, so, sometimes I go to a divisional event or a, you know, like I said, prior years British Championships, no nerves, no excitement, no nothing, no competition. Like, why am I bothering? Obviously, that's very different for Sheffield. Everyone is competition, and they're all unbelievably good. And there's a lot of unbelievable training going on at the minute as well. So I've been, you know, after I went on the Sabado podcast and said, I've not been really looking at anyone else's training the last few weeks, I have been. I go, this is going to be good. There's some numbers being thrown around that are insane at the minute from all classes as well. And both male and female. So this is going to be amazing.
How do you feel about that 978.5?
I'm not even thinking about that. I'm thinking about 1,000. So, but my focus has been 1,000 the whole time. And everyone who keeps asking me about, oh, you're going to break the world record, I'm like, I don't care about the world record. I want 1,000. So
oh
that's,
my God, Tony.
That's where we're going. I'm not interested in 978. If it happens, it happens, right? Whatever. You know, I don't think that's where the standard is now. And I think Rondell's proved it. So I'm looking beyond it. And if it's a, you know, if I break the world record, fantastic. And hopefully I do that on second deadlift or whatever. But if it's a choice between chipping somebody else for a placing or whatever we get on that, or load up for 1,000 on that last pull, I'm going to be loading 1,000 for that last pull, and we're just going to go for it because I ain't really interested in the money. That's not why I'm doing the competition. So it's, I've got a completely different, probably a very different viewpoint to everybody else going into this. Is that that wasn't, that's not a driver. The driver is that platform, the opportunity, and putting on a show, and that's what I intend to do. So we'll see. We'll see.
Dude, that's freaking amazing. First off, and you know what? We had mentioned Gavin Aiden earlier. I swear to God, you got your mentality is a little closer to Gavin than you think because he's exactly that guy. Where when people ask questions like that, he's like, I dance to my own beat. I need to be excited with my goals. I need to. I have certain, and people who will be like, no, listen, think about it logically. You just have to chip this or do that. You're like, no, 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 no,
I've
no.
done all that. I've done years of that. Like, that's not what this is for. This is for just showcase and go for it. Balls out, go for it. Don't worry about placing. Don't worry about top five or anything. How many more Sheffields are we gonna get to? I don't know. So let's just go for it. So that's my mindset. It might kill me. I might go out on my shield and whatever and have a complete disaster. But if I don't go for it, I'm gonna always be wondering the what if. So I have to now. So that's
I
the
love
mindset.
that. Look at Babe Ruth. You just did a Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth walked out and called his shot, pointed his bat over into into the stands on left or right or whatever. And he would call his shot ahead of time and he would swing. And he would swing so hard, he was either going to knock it out the park or fall on his face, but he was going to swing. He was going to swing. Babe Ruth that year led the league in home runs. He led the league in strikeouts, but he was going to freaking swing. And we're still talking about him 100 years later. You know what I mean? You have to sometimes. There's something exciting about that. Like he's coming out swinging.
Well,
You
there's
know, he's
nothing
going
to
to see
risk.
someone.
There's nothing at risk from this, right? There's not a contest. It's not like you. I mean, the reason I did the British selections meet is so I could put up a total, so I know I've got a total that gets me to Worlds. So that's done and out the way. I couldn't do that. I'd have got a dispensation, but then it'd have been dependent on the total that I do at Sheffield. I was like, I don't want that tied to a selection. So I've done the selections meet. I did that with a bad back, like, okay, just got it out of the way, put my total up, did my 940 and got, okay, fine, it's done. Now I could just move on and focus on swinging.
I love
So
that
now
you
I'm
did
swinging.
that. I love that you guaranteed, like, no. I know what I'm going to be trying for at Sheffield. Let's put that to rest so I can come
Placeholder.
out swinging.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
nicely played. See, I was wondering about that, and I'm sure some people probably were like, why are you doing selections and whatever? But now it all makes sense. You had big goals to chase down, and there's
Yeah, I don't want,
let's.
I didn't want there to be a consequence if I do fall flat on my face,
Right.
which could happen, right? So
Right.
now that's out of
Yeah.
the way. So
In defending the world title and going back to the world championships, you gotta put that all in place. And 1,000 kilos at you'd be the first to hit 1,000 on our IPF international judging. Like that's a milestone. You could break records full all the time. There are gonna be some newer listeners, like new people are coming into powerlifting every single year. And some of them, although it hurts my heart to say, might not even know who Dennis Cornelius is. And he's the current holder of the world record in the 120s. But to be the first. You know, to hit at an international level with IPF international judging, and we all know how tough that is, to be the first to cross that 1,000 kilos would be huge. You're going to remember that. And Sheffield, people are going to remember Sheffield. So this, it's all lined up for you. And I think you're right. Yeah, fuck it. If I miss, we got the world championships. You know, we got other international events. Let's do something. Let's get spicy. Let's send a
Listen.
message to the other 120s of the world that are going to be coming
Well,
to Worlds.
I know, unfortunately, Rondell will be watching, right? And he'll be thinking, I should be there. And, he's been, not through any fault of his own, put to one side. And I feel for the guy, and I hope he gets back, and I'm sure he will. He'll get his chance at some point in the future. And this is mine, so I'm going to take it with both hands, right? That's where I am with it.
What about Bob Matthews? He'll be watching as well. And Bob has attempted 1,000 kilos in the gym, came up short, but that's a goal of his
Yeah, but he
to
did
hit a
that as a
thousand.
one. He, yeah, attempted that as a 105, though. I mean, that's insane, right? So, yeah, he's capable. He's very strong. He's very skinny.
Well, I don't know about for you compared to you, yes.
He puts on some muscle. Yeah, he's going to be a nightmare to deal with, in a good way. Like, he's exactly what we need. Want the competition. Good. Let's hope he can beat Dennis and Dev if Dennis gets back there as well.
Can you imagine? Dennis has been lifting weights lately. I mean, it's been consistent.
He did an 8 30-pound squat. Like, I've not
Yeah.
squatted anything for like 6 weeks. There's 8 30.
Yeah,
Right,
well, yeah,
Dennis.
exactly.
Yes. He's inhuman. That guy is a freak. And he pulled a 3:45 the other day. Right. So he looks like he's getting ready. I mean, nobody does sumo deadlift for fun. So he looks like he's getting ready to come back to competition.
That's true.
Nobody's out there doing a sumo for fun, are they? What are you doing? It's
Right.
not for any other purpose than performing in a competition. So he's obviously queuing up coming back. So whether that's for this nationals or the following one, who knows? But hopefully this one. That would be good.
I would love to see Bob, Dev, and Dennis go head to head to head at Nationals.
Yeah, me too. That'd be amazing.
That you they couldn't fumble the ball. You're not walking in there, to your point earlier, about just like I could take it on my openers. Not with that field.
Nope.
You might have a favorite in there, but they need to hit all their lifts,
Yeah. It's good.
which is what you want. So when you earlier in the or well last year, when you were taking shots at Bob,
Yeah.
where did that come from? You call him Sideshow Bob, which I thought was pretty good. Say Sideshow Bob, a 105 flunky, I think you said, or something to that effect.
A failed
So what
105 lifter. I think when Ash beat him, I called him a failed 105. Yeah.
failed 105? So you're getting the drums beating for a potential showdown. I mean, again, with all due respect, he's got to get through America, but he'd be a favorite too. But what was
What
that
was
to
the
get the
what came
drums
out?
beating?
Yeah, no,
Yeah.
he came on the Sabado podcast and was talking about him coming up to 120s and, his world domination. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. As the current 120 world champion, I should probably say something. So yeah, no, it's good. I mean, I've got any bad blood with Bob at all. I think he's excellent lifter. He technically is very good as well, so he's not going to have any problem switching over. I just look forward to the battle, and I just want to make some noise in the 120s for a change. And he feels like he could take it, so why not?
And this is, I had Marcel, his coach, come on, and he was like, look, if I'm, because Marcel coaches also Ashton, who's going 105s, and Anatoly, who's the current 105 world champion, was taking shots at Ashton. And then you took shots at Bob. And I asked him about that. And he's like, those guys are doing what they should do. They are the reigning world champions with two guys coming into their weight class talking big about taking the world title. If I'm the reigning world champion and two new guys are new to the Fed are coming in talking about taking the world title, I'm going to stand my ground. No sense backing up. No sense being shy because they're coming. So he
Exactly.
goes, if I was them, I would do the same thing. I'm going to stand my ground and fire shots and be like, well, come and get some then. And come and get some. And the rest of the sporting community be like, oh, this is getting good. Let's see this one. So he's like, no, this is to be expected.
Yeah,
You
that's
know, and
absolutely
both
normal.
you and
Yeah.
Anatoly. Both you and Anatoly are legends of the game, so you're already respected. But you don't want to be shy about it when you know it's coming regardless.
No. You've got to take it head on. And go with the flow. Although I've been, the wolf at the bottom of the hill, for many, many years. With Dennis at the top of the hill, and Buffy at the top of the hill, and then Christoph at the top of the hill. So depending on how far back you look, and then suddenly I'm the wolf at the top of the hill. I go, I know what it's like to be the one trying to climb it. So I know what it feels like as well. And they're coming to have a go. And I've not just got those wolves. I've got the wolves in the UK as well. I've got Indy becoming European champion. I had Kieran a couple of years before that, European champion. So I got four European titles from people that weren't British champion, because they've been circling around me and I haven't done the Europeans. So I'm doing Europeans in March after
Okay,
Sheffield
I
because
was
they
going to
moved
ask
it
you.
here, right? Yeah, so I'm doing
Right.
it because they moved it, so it clash it clash it used to clash with my prep for World Equipped, And they've moved it to March, so I'm going to do the one in March. I have a tug of war with Indy over the title there as well, so that should be fun.
Well, here's you got juniors like Jonah in Germany and Etienne from Lebanon, who's a
Yeah,
freak as well.
he's a freak. Yeah.
I mean, there's some young guys coming up that'll
Yeah.
be at Europeans now. Europeans. What's going on in Europe? Why is Europe exploding right now, piling far more competitive on the classic side?
I mean, you name a nation, they're all going through. They're all going through a phase of what the early phases, obviously, of what Britain have been through, France has been through, Italy with the women, and now you've got like the likes of Spain starting to emerge as well. And yeah, I don't know. They're just all following the same trajectory that we did, I guess, a few years ago. And in time, you only need one or two, like you said, a spark, one or two that, you know, get some success, and then that just pulls everyone else up with them. So, yeah, it's really exciting. But yeah, it is across Europe. I mean, it's yeah, it's gone crazy. And again, like thanks to Classic kicking off, and it's new lifters really. It's not old ones switching over or anything like that. It tends to be. They're coming from a young age. They're just coming juniors up and coming through, and we've had the same thing. We've got some phenomenal lifters coming up in our junior ranks. You know, I mean, you've shared, you know, shared a couple of their lifts in the last few weeks. They are unbelievable. You know, 370 kilo deadlifts at 18 years old. You know,
Yeah, Nanzo.
yeah.
Nanzo is who's a 120 actually. 18. I can't believe he's a 120. So to your point about the 120s rising, and Nanzo's pulling into like well into the 800s, and
Oh,
he's
it's insane.
phenomenal. He's a kid. He's
He is a kid.
huge, but he's a kid.
You got Dylan Sanchez, the 105s. He pulled 387 and a half at the selections meet. We've just got
Wow.
absolute freaks going through. I was like, oh, this is fun. So having been through the years of being the only one being competitive, really, and there's on me and Owen Hubbard for a long time, and Stephen Manuel. As being the competitive Brits in the international stage, so suddenly the entire team's competitive. And you go, well, this is new. You can actually go to Europeans and you know the women's team win, the men's team win. You go, oh, this is unheard of for us, you know. So yeah, it's really exciting, and that spurred me on as well to just keep going, keep competing, keep trying. You're still getting stronger. Just keep going. You know, I've had a few periods of stagnation where things didn't move. I've just hung in there, and I've always felt like I was capable of that kind of decent total coming out. And that decent total at the time was like the 940. I was like, I've been capable of a 940 for about 7 years. I was like, surely this is going to happen at some point. And you know, it did all in 1 year. Like last year, just sort of happened. And now I feel like I've already gone past it. You know, yeah, I did 9.55 at the British when I could have done a 9.65, 9.70. So yeah, 1,000 from there doesn't sound stupid. And then we had the numbers together, and I was talking, you know, the Sabado lads through that. And then we finished the call, and then they asked me afterwards, "Oh, what are you really planning on doing?" I went,
Your fellows, those aren't sound bites.
"Yes, that's the plan. What are you talking about?"
What the fuck? That was real. What are you? What the hell? But I mean, honestly, if you think percentage, so other people in other weight classes, smaller weight classes, will think, well, 45 kilos on a total is huge. Not when you're already at 955. Percentage wise, they're thinking if they're at 700 kilo total, whatever weight class they're in, they're thinking 45 kilos from 700 to 745 is huge. Yeah, but not when it's 955. The spread, the differential and percentage wise is so much smaller. So they don't, not most of the population of powerlifting, they hear that podcast will think he's dropping sound
Oh,
bites. No, 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 no.
he's mad. What's he talking about? Well, if you think
Yeah.
about the best lifts I've done at squat, bench, and deadlift in competition is a 965, right? I did the bench was 250, which I did a few weeks ago at the British selections. The squats a year ago, where I was British last year. I am stronger than when I did that 350 for sure. And the deadlift 365 was third pull really with nothing really to pull for at Worlds. I kind of already won it. So. You know, for me, like, oh, can you add 15 kilo to that deadlift? Probably. Can you add 10 kilo to that squat? Probably. Can you add a little bit on the bench? Probably. Oh, you're there. Like, so that's That's where my mindset was, always has been. And then I'm looking at Jesus and going, what's Jesus at all? 1200? It's like, ah, Christ, that's 104%. I need another 20 kilos. Where am I going to get that from?
Well, yeah, it's crazy what Jesus is doing. Talk about something special about being around during the Jesus Olivares era. We thought Ray was special, and he was, but Jesus is out totaling at like 25, destroying what guys who were on gear are doing in the untested.
There's no fathom. You just got to accept it for what it is and just enjoy watching it. And that's exactly where I am with it. I can't wait to be on there with him doing all that. It's gonna be amazing. I don't know. But then I'm looking at all the lifters and going, well, in comparison to the world records and some of the numbers that they're knocking around, and Gel did the 800 total, which has helped because it's made the 74's life a bit harder. In terms of percentages, that helped us out. So, thanks, Norway.
Even Norway's coming up. They're a small nation, but they got some potent lifters with Mark Jenner and obviously Shell.
Well, they were massive in the equipped, so it's just a matter of time before that surge comes back. They were amazingly equipped. It was always sort of Russia, Ukraine, and Norway at the equipped world championships were always the team to look out for. And I think as they've got that history, it's taken a long time for them to get the idea of the switch over to classic. I mean, Chell talked about that in his own lifting, right? It took him a while to realize that I probably should have switched and switched a while ago. And now he has. And I think he had problems with his hips, which didn't help, and he was supported by the suit. So, but as a nation, if everything is, around equipped lifting and everyone you're training with is an equipped lifter, to be the one classic lifter, it's really awkward, right? And nowadays in the UK, it's the opposite to that, right? To be the one equipped lifter, it makes you feel like the oddball. So they've got to go through that. So it'll be a slow transition in those nations, which is probably why we don't see Ukraine and Russia coming and dominating the classic. Well, Russia, for obvious reasons, they've not been around for a while, but they're not coming and dominating the classes when they are there, and Ukraine aren't either.
I
Maybe
wonder if
they
they,
will.
well, I was, yeah, that's what I was about to say is like when they flip that switch in full go, full bore, and to the point of Russia not being around in recent years. So they're, I'm wondering what's going on in Russia. We don't fully know. And when they do come back, and they're going to come back at some point, who emerges? Because people come out of nowhere. By the last time they were around, since then, new people have probably emerged. Old people have gotten better, or maybe even exited, and we got new champions, and like it'll be very, everything will shake up. And will they fully commit to classic like some of the other Western nations have? And what will that look like?
Yeah, who
It'll be
knows? I mean,
interesting.
interesting to see how Musayev comes back, if Russia come back, what he comes back as. I mean, he's done a couple of competitions in Russia at like 130 body weight and stuff. So whether or not he ends up coming back as a 120, I don't know. But doing some crazy numbers, like pulling 400 and whatnot. So,
Holy smokes. 130 though. I mean, 10 kilos is 22 pounds. That's
that's a
not a
lot. It's a
small
lot of body
drop.
weight. No. We'll see. But there's probably people to replace that. There'll be others, won't there? It's a huge nation. And
He came out of nowhere, pretty much. So people rise relatively quickly. It'll be really interesting to see. Yeah, I know they're gonna come back at some point. And I think some people are gonna be rattled and shocked. You've dealt with the Russians before, but some people who have been competing internationally without Russia around might have an inflated sense of what it feels like. But when they come back, other people who've dealt with Russia will be like, well, no. They're a for real powerhouse if you got a Russian in your weight class.
Ignore the nominated totals.
That's some advice.
Ignore them. Just assume it's going to be hell. It will be.
Assume they're a contender if they're from Mother Russia. Assume that's coming. We had the GOAT podcast. Matt Gary's calling it the boat now. I'll rock with that. I like it. But best of all.
I came up with a new one, was boot, which is best of our time, which is I think what you were talking about in the classic, right? So you can't really call the classic the last 11 years goat. I mean, I think that's nonsense, and I agree with Matt to a large extent as to what he said at the beginning of that podcast when he was setting out his definitions. But yeah, I'm gonna go with boot.
I like it. I'll rock with boot. Who do you think is the boot, and who do you think is the boat?
Yeah,
The
okay.
greatest of all time and the greatest of our time.
Best of our time is Jesus, bar none. I think that's non-debatable. Boat, it's a hard one, mate.
Yeah.
Best of all time is really tough because you're comparing across equipped, classic. You're comparing different eras, and you're really looking at did somebody come out and be a real standout? Like from when I first started powerlifting, and I was looking at super heavyweight lifters like you do, because I was a tall guy, I figured I might end up being a super heavyweight anyway. That's who I'm looking at. And at the time when I first started, I came into it, and the one that was a freak and far ahead of everyone else was Brian Siders, and he didn't get a mention. I was like, oh, okay.
Oh,
Maybe I'm
well, I should
remembering
say
this wrong. You got an equipped one.
I have an equipped one about to drop today. So
Okay.
some of these guys are going to get, yeah, some of these people, because we divided it up. But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So I was because he was. I think he was totaling over 1,200 in single ply kit at the time, and nobody else was anywhere near it. I remember I was in conversation with Dean about, oh, what he. Well, you know, if Brian turns up, you just forget it. Everyone's competing for second and below, as if he gets a lift in. I think he was a bit erratic, but very, very strong. So that was an interesting one. Brad and his deadlift were just insane. When
Young him,
and
yeah.
he was at Suzdal in Russia. Was that the second Worlds? That was the first one. I think that was the first one I did in 2013. And seeing Brad deadlift was always a amazing. So he was definitely one that was on my list. He's probably on the others as well. So the debate around Sergey Fedosenko, what he did in the equipped and the classic, and he's running both, hard to take him off the table.
Ed Cohen, if you're going back, like guys like Ed Cohen, who like
Ed
yester.
ridiculous, but a game changer in terms of the impact they had on the sport, which is why I liked Matt's ranking. And he's You know, he put down some different criteria. It wasn't just world titles, it wasn't just world records, and it was also impact on the sport. And, you know, often it comes down to how you make other people feel in the sport as well when they were around you at the time, and how they got you interested in the sport and pulled people in that attraction. So I find it almost impossible to come up with one name. I end up listing about eight, and then I probably need to go through Matt's scoring system and see where I land.
Fair enough, yeah.
But it's really
Also,
tough.
what I know, so Matt mentioned Lee Moran squatting like over 1,000 pounds, 455 kilos. And he was talking about it was the first at a national level event. And he's talking about it on the podcast. I can't remember if it was the classic podcast or the equip one about to drop today. And I double probably the equip one, actually, now thinking about it. But so I doubled back and took a look at the video. Matt sent me the video and I posted it on King of the Lifts.
Is this the one where he
And
knocks himself out and takes him three
knocked
attempts? Is that,
himself out
yeah.
in an opener,
Yeah.
unconscious.
Yeah.
Then goes up, and so we nailed it on his second attempt. Then on his third attempt, all of the weights came off on one side, and 1,000 pounds flew like off of his back, went projectile like the bar. It was wild, happening in the same time. And he's concussed. When you're concussed, it stays with you. Like you can have concussion-like symptoms for months. So he's concussed when all this is happening. Like the pressure when you're concussed, having the pressure of 1,000 pounds on you, the blood pressure in your head, you know, I'm surprised he didn't pass right back out. That's scary. This is crazy. And then he comes back in and hits it again. I posted that on King of the Lifts, and we're close to like 30,000 likes on
Yeah.
that. Like that video blew up, and everyone's like, I can't believe this happened. Like, I can't believe this happened back in the day. And I noticed, though, what like some of the comments noticed as well. Look at the crowd at that US National Championship. It was like a crowd. We kind of think powerlifting peaked right here. Like, I think powerlifting is peaking right now, but there was a lull. It came in waves. There was a time period in the 80s with Cohen and some of these guys where powerlifting, we thought it must have
Was
been like,
huge. Yeah.
it was huge.
And
It was like a,
bodybuilding was as well, and that's been through those phases, right? And I think that's something probably followed a similar trajectory as a bodybuilding. But yeah, we feel like we're, you know, everything's new and it's now, and now is the time because we're in it. So the recency bias point is very, very valid. But it's difficult to associate yourself to something if you didn't live through it. And I think that, you know, someone who goes back a lot further, and Matt, who's got all the history of being around it at the time, being a lifter at the time, and then coming all the way through and coaching, you do have to listen to, you know, to learn a bit more about the history of the sport and where it's come from and where you've come from. And these, you like lifters now that are very blinkered in their world view of what they're doing. And to be honest, I think they've had to be to get themselves to where they are. So I don't blame them, actually. But there is something incumbent on all of the current lifters that they should have a bit of more of appreciation of where the sport has come from. And I think you're going to do that podcast, right, about a bit more about the history of the sport and how it developed. And I
Right.
think it's really important that, you know, certainly a current crop of lifters, you know, understand that. But so you don't repeat the mistakes of the past as well. Like if you forgot that equipped lifting existed and we just carry on with classic for a little while, and then 10 years time people start coming out with equipment again, and you go, are we going to go back through the same cycle? That's not what we want to do.
It becomes an arms race all over again, and that's how it happened.
That's exactly how it happened. So you don't want to repeat the mistakes of the past, so you have to get an appreciation of you know what happened back then. And you know it's easier for me because I grew up with somebody that was living it as well. You know, he was a powerlifter back in the day and told me about all these guys, and he had the old powerlifting magazines. So I had an appreciation of where the sport came from. Obviously, I've been in it a long time now, and I'm becoming one of those old farts who start talking about the past. The blinkered view and not being a fan of powerlifting, that blows my mind that you can be an elite powerlifter and not be a fan of the sport. It just baffles
It's
me, if I'm
funny.
honest.
It's funny, you know how like archaeologists come across old remnants of a civilization that they are far more advanced than we would have thought, and then looks like some information was lost, and then we scaled back hundreds of years, and then we see those civilizations where they were far more primitive to the one before, and then we scaled back up, and it kind of went in waves a little bit, and it wasn't just a linear progression up. And sure, we're peak technology-wise, whatever now, for sure. But we saw that. And sometimes when I post something from the 80s, like the Lee Moran video, and people saw how they were on a stage and hundreds of people in the crowd, like it was a for real crowd. At one point, we were on mainstream TV. We were closely linked with World's Strongest Man, with Bill Kazmaier, et cetera. A lot of our world champions from IPF cross over to strongman and become the world's strongest man at the same time as well. And both of them are on mainstream TV and then go into WWF at the time, now WWE, like pro wrestling, making millions of dollars for actually mainstream. And it was when we double back, it's like uncovering an ancient civilization. No. No, we had peaks and valleys. Yes, it valleyed for a while before we had this new peak, but we weren't always in that valley before. We had another peak and then boom, boom, boom. And it's interesting
Well,
to relive
and
some of
if
the history.
you know, and the journeys of the federations and what they've done, and the splits and the joins and da da da, and how we've got to where we've got, it's really important to understand that stuff so that we don't, you know, if eventually the people that are powerlifters now are going to be people that run the sport in 50 years' time or whatever, right? So they need to understand everything that's happened before so they don't go and make similar errors or, you know, make mistakes in the future on decisions about the future of the sport. So it's, you know, I agree. And like you said about, you know, you're looking back and you're trying to imagine what it was like in the time where there was no internet and there was no live streaming and there was, you know, it wasn't that long ago. It's barely what, 10, 15 years ago or whatever. I mean, yes, when I was still competing, there was no live streaming of competitions. Nobody knew what it was. But you'd have to drag people to the competition so that you knew it actually happened. You have some evidence that you were there.
Here.
I need you to watch this,
This happened,
otherwise,
right?
who am I going to tell?
And also to your point about learning about the past and everything, we have had federations disassociate, disaffiliate from IPF, and we see what happened to those feds. New ones come in, affiliate, and we've seen what ended up becoming of them. And it takes time. So when this happened again in the US, it's like, well, not that it's going to happen every time the same every time, but at least learning some lessons, it might not be what you think. Things you do learn from the past. It's true. At least take some notes and understand there are possibilities. If this has happened before, what happened to those other fans?
And for somebody to have a holistic view of, is this going to be a good thing or a bad thing long term for the sport to make that decision? I think, yeah, obviously a split in the sport in the US is never going to be a good thing for the sport overall. And eventually, hopefully it works out and, you know, it is good. But right now it's not, is it? It's terrible. Like, you've got the bulk of the lifters, the membership of the bulk, divisional, lower level lifting, being in a completely separate federation to the, so, you know, elite lifters, which, who wants that? Like, that doesn't make any sense to have that. So don't, you know, maybe it could have been avoided, maybe it couldn't. I don't know. Like, I'm not going to speculate on it, but just understand what happened to be able to avoid similar things happening in the future or in different countries. Makes sense, right? You need to understand that and be involved in it. Don't be blinkered, you know? Be aware, eyes open on the stuff.
It's looks like, at least at the elite level, everyone's starting to shift over under the same umbrella, which is nice for worlds and the rest of the world to watch, you know, these guys and girls like battling on worlds. But you're right in terms of underneath, Powerlifting America, the IPF affiliate, is still trying to gain ground for, like, you need meet directors, you need, it takes time. It's so people think, like, it can't just flip on all of a sudden. And if everyone shifted over all of a sudden, they couldn't handle the influx. They're like, you can't. Yeah. Like, where's the membership to handle? Where's the meet directors? Where's, like, even the core to handle everything from database to all of it? It would be so, it does take some time, and we'll see how it plays out. But usually you get the elite over first, and their impact on social media and worlds
eventually
is
the rest
important.
Are follow. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But like I said, you need the people that are willing to help run the sport to be the ones that come over. But you can't just be all the lifters and then none of the people that are actually willing to volunteer their time and be involved and make the sport what you need it to be. The volunteers are what, at the minute, are what keep the sport alive. Like, that is where we are. The reality is, though, whilst we've got these big championships like Sheffield and whatnot, the core of the sport is voluntary, and it's the lifters and the referees and the, like you said, the event people and, you know, volunteers really that are keeping the lights on and keeping the local championships happening. That needs to have some focus as well as the other end, right? So
that's why I went
back into that.
When I had people on like you, when Natalie Richards was on just recently, she's talking about getting, you know, her reffing under the way so she can start reffing, and all these other big name lifters who have that.
Yeah.
It's amazing to see, because it's without you guys, this doesn't move. This thing doesn't move forward. People just want, and most lifters just complain and take. Show up at championships, show up at local level meets, complain about how they run, complain about calls by the ref, complain about the setup of warm-up rooms, or complain about whatever, and they take, but they're not. It's like, okay, fair enough. And some of those critiques might be true, but how many times have you volunteered this year?
Yeah.
Some people should be asking you that in the comments when you give. Please, volunteer, show up, become a part of it. And maybe you're going to be help leading, you know, you can have, there are people who run the platform, and there's platform managers. Work your way up to be a platform manager and run that bad boy. Then if you think you can have a quicker turnaround time, or you think you could, whatever it is, get in there. Well, they'll take you. We need you.
Yeah.
You can,
no one's going to say
otherwise,
no.
Right? Yeah. They're not going to say no. That's how much we need you. You know, and things are changing a little bit where they have, at the world level, they have paid spotter loaders, you know, we have crews that we bring in. Like, things are changing a little more professional all around, but certainly at local levels. And it's local levels we're kind of talking about that need the sport to grow. At the local level, in every major city, we need a competition.
But if that's
they're
your
not going to be able to say,
like,
hey,
if you're a new member, you're a new person to powerlifting, and we have far too many people that go to one championship and then you never see them again. And we need to understand how we keep those people in and how we keep them in the sport, and, you know, we make sure it's a good experience for those people that are first time coming into a competition, and how we support them. People that don't have a coach, or they don't know somebody who's already doing powerlifting, it's been very difficult. Certainly, you know, it's getting better, but, like, you know, 10 years ago, it'd be the first, you know, to just find One, what Fed you're supposed to be joining. Two, how to find a competition. Three, how to be prepared for that competition. Four, what to do when you're at the competition. Like, all of that just becomes total an impedance to be able to join a sport that you really want to be a part of. So you have to find ways of making that very, very easy and opening gateways and doing it through schools or colleges or whatever. You're giving people these opportunities to come and be a part of what we think is a wonderful sport. And it is, but we've got to make it that way at grassroots level everywhere as well. That's not easy. I mean, that is a combined effort of everyone in the sport to try and make that happen. Coordinated, obviously, but you know.
I mean, I'm glad you're like involved in Britain doing these kind of things. Like, we need people like you as well, your involvement. And I mean, a lot of people from Britain doing things, obviously Joe Whiteley doing like not only commentary, but also with Open Powerlifting and creating the database. And one thing that powerlifting has, our volunteer, the strength of volunteers and just people who are creative and ambitious. We've done a lot. Yeah. We've done a lot on our own without an influx of money and corporate help and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
We just.
Yeah. Because the power of the voluntary culture of powerlifting is enormous. Like, you can get a lot done with a lot of people that want to help. Like, it's, you know, you really can. You don't necessarily need to pump money in everywhere. You just need to coordinate the people that want to help. It's the main thing.
That's one of the main things. Listen, my friend, I know both of us kind of ducked out on work today to belt this off. I got to head back in, but I appreciate you, sir. I'm going to see you soon. And good luck in training, man. Keep riding that fine razor's edge right up until Sheffield. And I hope the best for you, man. And we'll have a couple cocktails in Sheffield.
Absolutely, mate. Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on again. Okay, bye.
You bet, man. Door is always open. I'm sure going to have you on again. And for everyone listening, as per usual, please do subscribe, give us high ratings. And until next time, six pack lap of that, six up, and we are out.